Okay, I think we're good to go here. Well, as Brother Jim mentioned, my name is Zach McGinnis. I am from Folsom. I'm not originally from Folsom. I'm from Southern Illinois. I moved to California in 2014, so I've been out here for just a little over 4 years now. Happy to be a part of the preacher training program that it takes place at Folsom. I think Tyler Brown was down here with you folks a couple of weeks prior on a Sunday morning and gave you a lesson. He is my colleague in that endeavor. And as Jim mentioned, I'm here to wrap up your summer series talking about when we all get to heaven. From what I understand, you guys have dealt with all the different stages of life from very early on to quite late in life, and so I'm here to talk about something that kind of applies to all of us, no matter how old or young you are. This is a pressing question, a pressing matter that needs to be given attention. When I first started putting this sermon together, I struggled with it a bit. I thought, okay, you know, what am I supposed to say about this? Heaven's good, hell is bad. The end. You know, let's wrap it up. I couldn't seem to get past that point. But upon further inspection and looking through the scriptures looking at all the different things the Bible has to say about heaven, I realized that there are some important things that we need to talk about that need to be discussed. There's two purposes behind my sermon tonight, two messages I want to get across to you. Number one being that there is preparation for heaven that needs to take place in our lives. And then number two, that something is going to happen when we get there. Once we're in heaven and we're joined together with the brothers and sisters in Christ that have gone on before us, or the second coming happens and Jesus comes and grabs us all and takes us up to be with Him and His Father, there are things that will take place after that. And so that's a little bit about what I want to talk to you about tonight. Later on in the message, we'll be looking at Revelation chapter 7, if you guys want to go ahead and open up there. We'll get there at some point. Now, this is a picture of the city of Paris. And the question I want to ask you is, if you were going to retire tomorrow and decided to spend your retirement in Paris, what are some of the things that you would do prior to that, prior to staking your claim on whatever street of Paris? I would assume that everyone here would be very happy with that retirement package, that everyone would be very excited to be able to look up and see the Eiffel Tower every morning whenever they get up out of bed. And so you have to think about these things. And some of the thoughts that would cross your mind would probably be, well, I need to invest in some French currency, whatever that may be. I need to make sure I have the proper identification. I need to make sure that I have reliable transportation once I'm there, even transportation getting to Paris itself. That all of my responsibilities here in the United States need to be taken care of and wrapped up and kind of pulled together. I need to make sure my home is sold, that I have no need of my car or my furniture. All these things are taken care of before I embark for Paris, France. And so the point I'm trying to make with this is that there are preparations that need to be made for heaven as well. That is our retirement plan as Christians. And it's one that's quite certainly, we can be certain that it's going to be better than retirement in Paris or whatever. Maybe Hawaii's your dream spot or your dream retirement home. But whatever it may be, anything that this earth has to offer, heaven is going to outdo it. We can be sure of that. And so because of that, shouldn't we be planning ahead or as Jesus says, laying up our treasures in heaven and not laying them up in things down below on earth and making preparation for that retirement package that's going to come for us at some point. In John chapter 14, verse 2, Jesus is talking with his disciples, his 11 apostles at this point. Judas has already left to go meet with the religious leaders to betray him. But at this point, Jesus is explaining some things to the disciples, And he tells them, in my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? So we know based on this passage, based on the scripture, that Jesus is up in heaven making preparations for us right now. For those of us who are faithful, for those of us who serve him while we are on this earth, we have a room that is being prepared for us by Jesus Christ himself. Billy Graham said this, and it seems obvious. Heaven is real, and hell is real, and eternity is but a breath away. Now, that seems like the most obvious statement to a Christian that anyone could possibly make. And Billy Graham certainly, while we would disagree with him in certain areas, he's certainly a noteworthy man in the religious realm. He was a Baptist, I believe, by faith, but why would he make such an obvious statement? Someone that impacted so many lives and touched so many people, why would he have to say something like this? I kind of think the point that he's making with this is that it's easy to say, yes, heaven is a real place, but it's a very different thing to be able to kind of wrap your mind around or grasp that concept of yes, there is a paradise waiting for us, and yes, it's going to be perfect, and there is going to be no more tragedy or no more depression or no more sadness at all. Because we're not privy to such a state on this earth. We can't possibly fathom that or understand it for ourselves. I think we probably have glimpses or certain moments of things where, you know, you're in your thoughts and you say, well, this was a perfect moment. I'm going to try and hold on to this moment in time in my life. This is what possibly heaven might be like for me. But it's a really hard thing to do. I knew California was a place that existed before I moved out here. And now I'll tell you, in the Midwest, especially among the churches out there, California does not have a strong reputation. I'll just say that right now. Even when I go back home to visit my family, the members of the church that my mom attends in Paducah, Kentucky, will still ask me, are there any strong churches in California? You know, they'll very inquisitively, and a very skeptical manner. And I kind of laugh and say, yeah, I know of a few, you know. But it has this reputation of being a very liberal, very wayward, almost hedonistic state. And now I know that's not the case. I came out here and experienced it for myself and came to realize what California is actually about. I was able to wrap my mind around the things that make up California, the experiences that go into California. And so it became more real to me after spending 4 years in the state. Well, so that's probably what heaven's going to be like. We're going to not be able to truly understand or grasp it for ourselves until we're actually there. But it's kind of surprising, actually, that Billy Graham could just be saying heaven is real and have that statement make an impact on his audience because, according to Pew Research, with a poll they did in 2014, only 88% of evangelical Christians actually believe that there is a heaven. And that's completely caught me off guard. So we fall into the category of evangelical Christians. An evangelical Christian is someone that believes that Jesus is the Son of God, that he died for our sins, and he's the only way to approach the Father. Only 88% of us believe that there's a heaven, though. And even fewer believe in a hell. 82% of us believe that there is a hell. We're getting beat out by the Mormons here. They have 95% that believe in heaven. And even the Muslims, 89%. You know, it's astounding to me. This is something that's so basic, so mainstream when it comes to religion. Why would you not believe that heaven and hell, such basic things? Most of the secular world accepts this. And yet, 10% of Christians, 12% of Christians don't. That's mind-boggling to me. But it is what it is. Going back to Billy Graham's quote, he mentioned eternity. It's just a breath away. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 11, Solomon tells us, he says, he has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. Solomon is saying here, or what I believe him to be saying, is that there are beautiful things on this earth. There are beautiful moments in time that you experience while you're on this earth. And yet, he put this desire for something more, or he put this sense of there being something beyond this life into our hearts. We know that eternity has been in the books, in the plans, since the very beginning, since the creation. It's something that God has always purposed for us. And so we need to make sure that we're aware of that, and not just clinging to the things of this life. And I'm sure everyone's seen something like this before, something similar, where it's kind of trying to give you an idea of what eternity is actually going to be like. You know, we're just here for a very brief moment in time. James chapter 4, verse 14 refers to this life as a mist or a fog that's passing away, and yet eternity is going to stretch on and on and on continually to no end. You know, I've seen multiple preachers get the really long rope or cord or fishing line or whatever it is, and color just a little tiny bit of it, red or black or some other discolorment, and say, you know, this is life, and the rest of this rope represents the entirety of our service to God, the forever, the eternity that goes on. Another passage that I like in reference to heaven is 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9, and it's actually Paul quoting Isaiah chapter 64, verse 4, and it reads, "But as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man imagined, what God has prepared for those who love him." Now, he's actually talking about the secret wisdom here, that the gospel message of Jesus Christ that he's imparting to the Corinthian church. But I think that the application to heaven itself is an accurate one, that we can't possibly understand or fully comprehend what Jesus is preparing for us, what God has prepared for us, those that are faithful to him. So what I have up here may seem kind of random. These are a list of a few of my favorite things. The song that goes, "These are a few of my favorite things." These are some of my experiences on this earth that I consider to be perfect. Chocolate Malts from the Union Dairy. It's a place where we used to meet my dad's parents growing up, and we go get the best chocolate malt. They always give you the remainder in a metal container. That's the only way to eat a chocolate malt, if you have that extra left over in the metal container. Going to baseball games growing up at Busch Stadium where the Cardinals play. Unfortunately, I'm a Cardinals fan, so I know that's getting off on the wrong foot with most of you already, but that's okay. Just the smell of the freshly mown grass and the foot-long hot dogs and just all the atmosphere of the baseball park is something perfect in my eyes. I go up to preach at the Tahoe congregation, the South Lake Tahoe congregation, from time to time. And, you know, it never gets old, just turning that corner on Highway 50 and seeing Tahoe pop out at you for the first time. There's nothing more beautiful than that, in my opinion. And John Denver's Greatest Hits, we used to listen to those on cassettes and then on CDs once CDs came out, on road trips growing up. That was my parents' go-to album right there. And then just the way freshly cleaned bed sheets feel, you know, so soft to the touch and comforting and warm and inviting and all those things that help you get a good night's sleep and help you relax. This is my heaven on earth, and I think it helps me to kind of understand a little bit more about what heaven may be like. If I was to take all these and bind them into one single day or blend them all together and be able to somehow experience them all at one time, I think to myself, you know, this is probably what heaven's going to be like for me. You know, these are all these perfect moments happening simultaneously are kind of what heaven's going to be like. I have a few more things other than this written down, you know, at home. I just kind of look at it from time to time and say, you know, this is my heaven. This is what it's going to be. Let's go ahead and get to our text. As I said, Revelation chapter 7, I want to look at verses 13 through 17 specifically with you this evening. The English Standard Version is what I'll be reading from. There are several several different texts that I could have chosen to talk about heaven with you, but this one spoke truest to me. So I'll go ahead and read the text and then make some comments. Starting in verse 13. "And then one of the elders addressed me, saying, 'Who are these, clothed in white robes, and from where have they come?' I said to him, 'Sir, you know.' And he said to me, 'These are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore they are before the throne of God, and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. They shall hunger no more, neither shall they thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to the springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes.'" So we have John with his revelation here, and he's assembled and sees this great multitude, people from every nation, clothed in white, and they're holding palm branches, and they're surrounding the Lamb and God on his throne, and they're praising God. And one of the elders speaks to him, and obviously he has a little conversation with them. And then gets the elder to explain who this great multitude is, or who are these people that have come to the throne to celebrate and worship God. And he says they are the ones that have been washed with the blood of the Lamb, that have made themselves pure and clean and holy in God's eyes. They've been justified and sanctified by God. That's an important thing to remember, that it's not just going to be everyone in heaven, you know. It's going to be the people that choose to not only purify themselves in the blood of Christ, but to follow God faithfully and obediently to the point of death. I want to look at verses 15 through 17 specifically, though, because they seem to give us the most information about what heaven may actually be like. Now, obviously, Revelation has a lot of symbolism and imagery within it. But I think that we can kind of grasp some of these concepts and turn them into some thoughts and ideas about what may go on as we serve God and worship Him throughout eternity. Verse 15, "Therefore they are before the throne of God and serve Him day and night in His temple, and He who sits on the throne will shelter them with His presence." So number one, we're going to be before the throne of God, and then we're going to serve Him day and night. Now, when I was a kid, I didn't like the thought of this very much. I would read this passage and say, well, that doesn't sound very fun at all. Not my idea of a good time, you know, just standing around, surrounding God on His throne and doing things to serve Him or worship Him, give Him honor. I felt like I would get tired of that pretty quickly, but I don't think that, obviously, that's not what it's going to be like. It's not going to be just a boring thing. There will be no concept of time necessarily. These things are symbolic and images to give us the sense of what we're going to be doing there, I think. And you know, as whatever form we take in heaven, it's going to be one of service. It's going to be one of worship. But then God's going to do something for us as well. He's going to shelter us with His presence and protect us and give us a sense of fulfillment, give us a sense of self-worth while we're there. In verse 16, "They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any scorching heat." Now, whether this is figurative or literal, I'm not sure, but I think we understand that we're not going to care about food. We're not going to care about being thirsty anymore. We're not going to be concerned with the things of the world anymore, the physical things. Their food and drink won't matter anymore. How often would you say, or how much time would you spend per day thinking about just where you're going to eat or what you're going to drink next? I know that I have a conversation with my roommate at least once a day about where we're going to get lunch. Sometimes that takes 30 minutes just to figure out where we're going to eat. None of that's going to be happening in heaven. It's going to free up so much time for us. And then we're not going to be exposed to elements there. Again, it falls back into the shelter and sense of protection that we'll have with God. But we're going to be surrounded by this blinding light, and yet no heat's going to penetrate us, or, you know, we're not going to be exposed to elements. And then the last verse, Revelation 17. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to the springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. So obviously, Jesus is the Lamb. He's also our shepherd. It's an interesting concept there. Have you ever known a lamb to be the leader of a group of sheep? I certainly have not. But in this case, the pure and innocent young lamb that is Jesus Christ is going to be our leader and our steadfast guide. He's going to bring us to living waters. It's the sense of being constantly refreshed. You know, never wanting for anything. Never feeling like there's a need that's been unmet or anything of that nature. Constantly being given living water to survive on. And then the very common concept of no tears in heaven. We sing the song all the time. But God's going to take away sadness and sorrow and depression and all these negative feelings and emotions that we have wrapped up with this world and the things of this earth. And he's going to take all those cares and fears away. It's a pretty special thing to look forward to, I think, just looking from this passage. Even if we take into account the symbolism and imagery there, that we have to realize that heaven is going to be a special experience for us, no matter how we look at it. So just to kind of throw a lot of verses at you at once, these are several different passages that also deal with the subject of heaven in the Scriptures, and not necessarily ones that I wanted to take hard, steadfast, in-depth looks at this evening, but just to kind of give you some reminders about some things, about how heaven's going to be. In Isaiah chapter 65 and verse 17, the prophet tells us that former things are no longer going to be remembered. We're not going to have short-term memory or long-term memory there. We're not going to necessarily remember the things of the former life. That our new life is going to be all that matters, all that's important to us. Of course, you're familiar with Matthew chapter 7, verse 14, when Jesus says, "Small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life." And obviously, he's talking about heaven there. Heaven's not going to be overcrowded. It's not going to be overpopulated. There's not going to be that many people that make it there. It's a small pathway. It's a narrow gate. And then later on, in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 30, Jesus is addressing the Sadducees that asked him about the resurrection. And he explains to them that people are not going to marry and not going to be given in marriage. So there's going to be no continued marriage in heaven. There's going to be no new marriage in heaven. Now, it's some people like to speculate, you know, we're going to be able to recognize others in heaven. Maybe we will, maybe we won't, I'm not sure, but at least we know we're not going to be marrying people while we're up there. Be interesting to see what, it makes me think about other familial relationships and whether, you know, will we still have brothers and sisters and parents and grandparents? Will we recognize those people? I'm just not sure. Colossians chapter 3, verse 1 tells us that Christ is currently seated at the right hand of God, will remain seated there for all of eternity. And if you remember, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, asked Jesus, came to him and said, "We want to sit at your right hand and at your left hand when we are up in heaven with you." And Jesus said, "That's not my mind to give. That's the Father's decision to make." And then 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 4 tells us that our inheritance is going to be imperishable and undefiled and unfading. You know, no thief is going to break in and steal, and no moth is or dust or rust is going to corrupt our inheritance that we have from the Father. And then a couple more passages in Revelation 21 and verse 21 is where we get the concept for the pearly gates and the streets of gold that are so popular with the secular world. Talking about the 12 pearly gates and the streets of gold that are as transparent and shiny as glass. And then Revelation chapter 22, verse 5, there will be no night, but we know that there's also not going to be a sun anymore. It's just going to be, we're going to exist with God's light and bathe in His presence and His glory. Just kind of a shotgun approach, a scattershot approach to some of the different thoughts about heaven that are recorded in the scriptures there. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go now. I actually do know what the song is. I just kind of like to make fun of country music every once in a while. I'm not the biggest country fan in the world. But this is a Kenny Chesney song that he recorded in 2008 called Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven. There was a preacher one time that was speaking to his congregation, and he asked them, you know, show of hands, who here wants to go to heaven? Well, of course, everyone raised their hand. And then he said, okay, follow-up question, who's ready to go now? No one raised their hand at all. why do we do this, you know? We spend all this time praising God, worshiping God, attempting to store treasure up for ourselves in heaven, and yet we're not really prepared to go. We're not in that emotional, mental, or even physical state. We're not in the right spiritual mindset, necessarily, to where we're ready to go right here, right now. If Jesus came back right now, are we ready to go? Not necessarily. We become too attached to our personal possessions, the things of this earth. Jesus said it before the Terminator did. I'll be back. I want to go back to John chapter 14 and just read verses 3 through 6 really quick. This is a follow-up to the verse 2 that I quoted earlier, or read for you earlier, starting in verse 3. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may also be. And you know the way to where I am going. And Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we possibly know the way? And Jesus said to him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. You can believe what you want to about heaven. You can, you do have to believe in it, that's for sure. You can think, you know, it's just that the imagery and symbolism in Revelation is literal. You can think that it's figurative. You can have whatever opinion you want about it. As long as you understand that there's one way to get to heaven, and that's through Jesus Christ. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. The only way we get to that glorious home in heaven someday is if we go through Him. How do we do that? We have to put Jesus Christ on in baptism. We have to bathe ourselves in the blood of the Lamb and wash our garments clean. This evening we want to give you the opportunity to do that. If you feel that's something that's missing in your life, if you haven't made that step forward and put Christ on in baptism and become a member of His church, then we offer you the opportunity to do that now as together we stand and sing.
Rescue the perishing, care for the dying, snatch them in pity from sin and the grave. Weep for the erring one, lift up the fallen, tell them of Jesus, the mighty name. Rescue the perishing.